The show's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and it's your connection to local music and more. On the program today, Richard Hagland, who is music director of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony program in Springfield. They're giving their concerto competition finals concert this Saturday. It's open to the public, and we'll hear about that and about Mr. Hagland and some of his other work coming up. Stay tuned to Live and Local. That was the final movement of the School Concerto, number 2 by Friedrich Seitz, performed here by Yitzhak Perlman with the Juilliard Orchestra conducted by Lawrence Foster. And that's from a disc called Concertos from my Childhood. And if you happen to have a young student of the violin of any sort of middle advanced level, chances are, and particularly if they study in the Suzuki program, you may well have heard them practicing a version of that concerto. This is Live and Local. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. This shows your connection to local music and more. And on this portion of the program, we have as our guest Richard Hagland, who is the director for the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Orchestra program, also the community orchestra there in Springfield, and founder and music director of the Erato Chamber Orchestra in Chicago, and assistant conductor for the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, also in Springfield, and also he's the librarian there. And he's joined us on the telephone, and the occasion for the conversation is in part that they've got a program this weekend, their concerto competition finals concert on Saturday. Thanks for joining us, Richard.
It's great to be here. We are going to warm the air with some wonderful young musicians on Saturday at 1:30 p.m. We started out the concerto competition when I came to Springfield now 7 years ago, believe it or not. We had a kind of a closed door behind the screen audition process, and where the young soloist would compete to play with the symphony orchestra in their annual spring concert. And I thought, although that process works and it's done a lot in different organizations, I thought it'd be nice to have a process where all the students that are competing could perform their piece that they've worked on for so long. A lot of these students have been working on these concertos for a year or more in some cases. And this gives them a chance to play in a public setting with a piano accompanist. Of course, we can't have an orchestra accompany all of them for all those pieces, but we can have the piano accompany them as they play their concerto. And for those listeners out there, a concerto is just a solo piece for a instrument with accompaniment, and usually orchestral accompaniment. And sometimes those concertos are reduced down to piano accompaniment. And that's where most people get their chances to play something like the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto, or the Beethoven Violin Concerto, or the Cecile Chaminade's Concertino. But we're going to provide them the opportunity to do this in a public venue at the Hoagland Center for the Arts, and it's free and open to the public to attend this. We'll have 9 students come and play various pieces. Mendelssohn Violin Concerto First Movement is one of them, and the Chaminade Concertino is another one of them. And so it's varied. You won't hear just all piano or all violin or all flute, but you'll hear all those different instruments. And some of the kids are seniors in high school, going off to either do music as a major or minor, and some are a little bit younger than that. And it's just really a wonderful afternoon. I've had young people come to this concert and really enjoy it. If you're a young musician, I think you enjoy it because you can see high school kids playing, and it's kind of inspiring, I think, for some younger players that might be out there. So if you have a younger student, instrumental student that might be interested in coming, we'd love to have them.
And this is the finals concert, so they've had a previous round?
They did a preliminary round with me in my office, but that was, it's pretty informal. It's just kind of make sure they can get through their piece, and a couple people, you know, decided that they weren't quite as ready as they hoped. So, but we selected these 9 students that really shone through, and I placed them in a random order. I just kind of broke it up for program and just kind of how a program might flow. So I didn't necessarily rank them, so they'll just be randomly presented. We will have 2 independent judges there on Saturday judging these kids, and fortunately, I don't have to be one of the judges. I can actually sit in the audience and enjoy the program with everybody else. But these judges will come up with a soloist for our spring concert based on their performance that day.
So do you just offer the opportunities for all the kids in the program to participate?
I do offer it, but we limit it to about 9 finalists or so.
Sure, but I mean for the preliminary round.
Right, so that's how we get the preliminary. Otherwise, it would go on and on and on during the day.
And
so the program's about 1.5 hours in length, and it's so varied that I think the audience will really enjoy it because, again, it's just so many different textures. I've listened to some auditions where we've listened to 28 or 30 flutes in a row, and it becomes overwhelming to hear that same texture in the same excerpts and the same pieces. But this is nothing like that. This is really a wonderful afternoon, and the parents are there supporting their students, of course. But some community is welcome to attend, and I think they'll really enjoy the concert.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the program there? I told you in an email conversation that I actually used to conduct the music direct the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program. It's been, I don't know, 15 years or so now, and it sounds like the program has really expanded drastically since I was there.
Well, yeah, and I think I came 7 years ago, and they'd never had... I know they'd had a lot of different conductors come and go, and they've had a lot of people that were just, they would conduct the orchestra, but they wouldn't necessarily do the organization, the music organization, the grant writing. They didn't have an office. And so when the Hoagland Center for the Arts was remodeled, it was used to be the Scottish Rite facility here in town. And they remodeled it to be a center for the arts. And what that created was an opportunity for the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony to have an office with a phone number, with a computer, with storage space, with the library, and all those things kind of came together right when I was hired. So I was fortunate in that. And what we did was I inherited a pretty small program that was, it was just kind of surviving at that point because of its lack of a home. And what I quickly realized is that we needed to kind of plant our garden from the seed on up. And so we started a program called Starter Strings because there's no string program in any of the schools in the Springfield area. It was eliminated in the 70s. So what I did was I went out on Tuesday and Thursday mornings at 7 o'clock and a big cup of coffee and started the Starter Strings program, which is our elementary program. And I'm proud to say that some of those kids now that I started are actually in the senior level orchestra. So we've seen some of those kids move all the way through our various levels of orchestra. And now we have 9 different Starter Strings programs in different elementary schools. I, of course, can't do all 9. I can't do that and everything else. So we have a wonderful staff of Starter Strings teachers that go out and either work before school or after school at these Starter Strings programs. And we started 148 kids this year on string instruments. So we then encourage those students to either study privately or attend our second-year class, which is called Junior Strings. And that is at the Hoagland Center for the Arts, and that's taught by a wonderful teacher, Shannon Schultz, from Bloomington who actually commutes down and teaches that class. And she does kind of a follow-up with the starter strings, gets them even more involved. And then those students join a private teacher and then move up through our three different other levels of orchestra, the preparatory orchestra, which is kind of an elementary age orchestra, the concert orchestra, which is our basically our junior high level orchestra, and then finally the symphony orchestra. And then in addition to all of that, we've started something that's really fun here on Wednesday nights called the community orchestra. And that is, it's really a kick to come and conduct that group because you have doctors and lawyers and homemakers and teachers and all sorts of people from different walks of life that just enjoy playing their instrument. So on Wednesday nights, they come and play, and we do standard literature. We've done the second movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony. We've done the finale to Shostakovich 5. We've done the finale to Sibelius 2. We've done Malcolm Arnold's Four Scottish Dances. So we've done a lot of standard literature, and we do fun things, too, like Bugler's Holiday and Clarinet Candy by Leroy Anderson. And actually, one of our performers in that group is a retired music educator, and he's composed a couple things for that group. So we have a varied abilities and ages and backgrounds in that, but what's fun is we don't have an audition, we don't have a competitive process. If you want to play in the community orchestra, you just show up and play. And believe it or not, we have balanced instrumentation. We have six first violins, about 10 second violins, four violas, six cellos, six to eight cellos, and two double basses, and all the other components, flutes. We have several flutes, three oboes, five clarinets, three bassoons, French horns, trumpets, trombone, and two percussionists as well. So we fill that out. So our whole program is really we start kids in our starter strings program, and then we have all the way through adults, amateur adult musicians that want to keep playing as well. So we're serving the music education, I think, process all the way through from the very beginning stages to into adulthood.
How many of the orchestras do you conduct?
I conduct all of the orchestras except for starter strings and junior strings, so I'm pretty busy. On Monday night, I conduct the symphony orchestra, and then Tuesday nights, I conduct the preparatory orchestra and the concert orchestra, and Wednesday nights, I conduct the community orchestra. And then when the Illinois Symphony is up and running, I'm busy on Thursday and Friday and Saturday with them. So I cover conduct for Maestro Deal on those and doing that and kind of juggling a lot of different balls at the same time in the air. And we kind of run from thing to thing. But it's really exciting to see the growth. We have over 300 students in the Youth Symphony program. We have 60 adult musicians in the community orchestra that I'm very proud of.
Why don't we take a break from the conversation a bit and maybe play one of the perennial favorites, not only for youth orchestra potential concerto performers, but also for, I think, classical listeners all over, the opening movement of the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto. What makes this concerto, particularly this movement, particularly workable for young students? Because they do seem to work on it very often.
Well, Mendelssohn was a genius. We all know that. He was a child prodigy, and he wrote this for his friend, who was a wonderful violinist. And I think his friend, David, had a influence on the writing of this and how it would lay and how it would perform. And I think it lays well on the instrument. And, you know, maybe that's a foreign idea for some people, but, you know, some people who play Shostakovich say that sometimes it's awkward for the string players to play some of the leaps and jumps because Shostakovich would jump around on the piano and think of himself more as a pianist in his musical writing. But when something's written by a violinist or somebody who really understands the violin, it can flow very wonderfully. Some pieces that have been written for certain instruments, like the Barber Violin Concerto, was considered unplayable at the time it was composed, but now it's done all the time. So I think the fact that it just lays so well on the instrument makes it accessible to younger players, and I think every violinist kind of starts out as this being one of their first big violin concerto they work on.
Yeah, they've got to be, not to misunderstand, they need to be advanced players.
Absolutely.
Very definitely. Well, here's a performance of the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto opening movement. You're hearing it on Live and Local on FM 90.9, where my guest is Richard Hagland, music director of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program in Springfield. That was a performance by Joshua Bell of the opening movement of Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto, and performed here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Joshua Bell was a more advanced student at the time he made that particular recording. We do also have a recording perhaps I should have played when he was a much younger. He was not an advanced student, I'm sorry, when he made that recording. He's an advanced professional. But we have a recording that maybe I should have played where he was much younger, because you can hear this performance, this piece, in performance by a young student who is in the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony in Springfield this Saturday at 1:30 at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. Is that on the 6th Street, am I remembering right?
Yeah, 420 South 6th Street, and there's free parking in the ramp right on the corner of 6th Street and Capitol, and We're going to be in Theater One, which is the Levi Ray and Shoup Theater, a beautiful performance venue. And again, it's just it's a free will donation at the door, so you can come and donate whatever you'd like, and bring as many people as you'd like to come and hear these wonderful young musicians perform.
And it's Richard Hagland speaking there. I'm Kevin Kelly. Richard is the music director and conductor for the three orchestras of the Youth Symphony program there, in addition to the Junior Strings program. Well, we really should say the four orchestras, because even though it's not a youth program, the Adult Community Orchestra is also your baby as well.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier, you're also the librarian for the Illinois Symphony, just by way of a little digression. What does that involve for those who might not be familiar with this concept?
Well, the librarian is kind of a misunderstood. People think of the librarian as somebody who just picks music out and then hands it out and then collects it again and then files it away. And certainly that is one thing a librarian does. But the music librarian is also responsible for checking the parts, making sure that everything is there, first of all, and then also looking for discrepancies and errata. Errata are, I think, misprints that might have happened. So we get lists from different services and different conductors and different people as to different things, discrepancies that the music director might then have to make a decision on and then mark all the parts. Sometimes the music director will make decisions on repeats and articulations and tempi and things that they want added into the parts. And so the librarian has to do that. Also, a big part of what a librarian does is what I call the ups and downs of being a librarian. And we have to mark how the bow is going to travel for all the string players in all the parts. And so when you look at an orchestra and they're all lined up and all the violins are moving just correctly in the right direction, that's because the librarian has gone through and marked everyone's part as to where they're going to go down and where they're going to go up based on the concertmaster's decision or the music director's decision. So it becomes a lot of organizing of music and marking it so that when the players come to the first rehearsal, when the professionals arrive at the first rehearsal, they have all of their parts are lined up and coordinated, which saves a lot of rehearsal time. So it's actually kind of an important thing that things be lined up and coordinated, especially when you only have a short amount of time to put together major pieces of music. Next weekend, the Illinois Symphony is doing the Korngold Violin Concerto, and so there was a lot of work with this piece specifically because it's rental music. And when you have rental music, that means a lot of different orchestras have used that specific piece of music. So you have to kind of clean up the parts and make it look very presentable and organized for the players. So that it varies. Sometimes the music director will say, find some variations on this piece or that piece for a Pops concert. Or one thing was, you know, find Michael Jackson's Thriller. Find an arrangement of that. So it's sometimes interesting. It's kind of investigative in a way, too. So you have to go online or find some other sources or find other people. And it's a part investigative, part kind of marking ups and downs, and then also making practice copies and sending them off. And so it's an interesting investigative process that the librarian has to do with the professional orchestra.
It's making me tired just listening to you describe the job.
Well, sometimes it is tiring, but what's fun is when that concert happens and you can sit and listen and you know the amount of work from, you know, starting out with ordering the music to all the work the musicians had to practice and all the marking, and you kind of sit back and you watch and you think, wow, you know, you helped bring all that together. And that's really the gratification, to bring this wonderful music to life.
And, of course, nobody in the audience has any idea.
No, they really don't. They really don't. In fact, musicians don't really understand how much work it is, I think, sometimes, too. You know, when you have somebody kind of delaying getting you the bowings that they want their section to have, they don't realize how much time it takes to get all the markings in all of the parts and get the practice copies made and get everything sent off. They think, oh, that concert's over a month away. It's no rush. Well, actually, it is kind of a rush at that point. So you always are working ahead. So actually right now, my efforts are actually on the next concert, which Maestro Diehl is allowing me to conduct the first piece on that specific concert, which is the Corelli Concerto Grosso. So I'll be marking the parts and studying the score as well. But we're going to do a world premiere of a piece by Judith Shatton called Jefferson in His Own Words, and she just sent me that the other day in the via email, and of course Brahms Symphony No. 2, which was in the library. So there's a lot of exciting things happening kind of in the future. The librarian's always kind of working a concert ahead, if you will, so that we can kind of stay ahead of the game.
So now any players or audience members listening to this interview have some inkling of some of what goes on behind the scenes with the physical music itself. Are you a string player?
I am a string player, but I'd hate to play for you or play for anyone else. What happened was, in high school, I was trained on piano and percussion, and my youth orchestra director knew that I was very serious about being a conductor. And, you know, as junior in high school, I had Stravinsky's Le Sacre du Printemps, The Rite of Spring, and I was studying that score, and I was trying to figure out how to conduct The Rite of Spring as when I was 17 years old. And
that's
so
impressive.
Well, I didn't say I knew how to do it, but I wanted to know how to do it. And he said, you know, Richard, what you should do is study a string instrument very seriously, because regardless of where you end up, it will help you. And so I took up the viola. And so I had to learn to read a new clef, and I had to learn to get my way around a string instrument. So this was a very good suggestion on his part, because by forcing me to become semi-proficient on viola, I took it through high school and also into college, and stuck with it for quite a while. This helps me a lot with teaching kids, and I feel comfortable picking up a violin or a viola and demonstrating some bowing articulations, or you know, especially with beginners, I'm totally comfortable with working with them. So it's really helped me a lot. But I'd hate to play on this concerto competition on viola on Saturday. I wouldn't dream of doing that. Maybe a marimba concerto or something on piano, but nothing on nothing on viola.
So the kids would probably beat you, in other words.
Yeah, they would. They would beat me badly.
So why did you choose the viola? I mean, because that now leaves you, you are now in one of your members of two populations, essentially, who are the butt of rather cruel jokes in the music world, being a violist and a conductor.
Well, and also a percussionist, too. I mean,
Well, that's true. That's right.
The percussionists get picked on a bit, too. You know, if you can't read music, you should be a percussionist or something like that. But then, I chose the viola because of its rich sound, and it fit me. I had long arms and, you know, just kind of, I think I was drawn to it for its, you know, its mellow side, as opposed to the violin. Also, it has a lot of rhythmical functions, and I think that appealed to me too, because it's kind of that rhythmical machine often in lots of works. So its mellow sonority based on its rhythm aspect of the string section. I considered the double bass as well, but I thought, I don't want to haul that thing around, so.
You know, that's kind of funny, because when I was in fourth grade, I had the opportunity to choose a string instrument. I chose the viola for exactly the same reasons you just described. Our strings teacher at the time, back in high school, Mr. Hoppel, played all the instruments for us, and I loved the sound of the viola. And I told my mom, and she said, well, we would have to rent that. I have a bass. Why don't you play the bass? Which I didn't want to do, but that's what I did, and I played that through high school. And I did have to haul it around, and it is a pain in the butt. And, that's really kind of funny.
Yeah, when I was hauling around a lot of percussion all the time in high school, you know, and my dad would be helping me, and they'd say, boy, don't you wish your son played the flute or the clarinet or something more simple? And I just never regretted it. I've owned minivans, I think, my entire driving career from when I was 18 till today. So I'm always perpetually hauling gear, but it's fun. It really is fun. And the viola has just been something that I actually haven't had the time to continue with for many years, but it still gave me that comfort level of working with kids and demonstrating things, and also having some confidence about even bowing things for professionals.
We're talking with Richard Haglund, who's music director of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony in Springfield. On Saturday, they're having their concerto competition finals concert at 1:30 in the afternoon at the Hoagland Center for the Arts. It is open to the public. Free, technically. They're taking a free will offering, essentially. Is that correct?
That's correct. And it is what it is. You can give little or as much as you'd like at the door. There's no pressure. It's just a hat, and we accept donations. We'll probably have a little reception afterwards with it's where you can greet all these younger, wonderful players. And we won't announce the results that day. We let the judges go and confer, and then we just send out a letter that day. And then, so the pressure is just for them to come and play their best on that day and not worry about who won and who lost. I think they all win just by doing the competition myself.
Excellent. Well, here's another of the pieces that's going to be on that program, the Hungarian Fantasy for Cello by David Popper, who was himself a 19th century cellist from, he was Czech, I believe, wasn't he?
I believe so, yeah. And this is, these kind of folk songs inspired this specific piece.
And hearing it on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Hungarian Rhapsody of David Popper, played by cellist Ofra Harnoy and pianist Michael Dusek, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And you can hear that work played live in Springfield on Saturday as part of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Concerto Competition Finals Concert. It's at 1:30 Saturday afternoon at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield. And in just a moment, we will continue my conversation with Richard Hagland, who is music director of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program. Support for our program today comes in part from Bloomington Normal NPR affiliate WGLT hosting Jazz Cabaret, an evening of dining, dancing, and cocktails in the Uptown Normal Marriott Hotel, featuring crooner Matt Belsante, Saturday, February 6th. Details at WGLT.org. Richard, when you're choosing music for the Youth Symphony Program, for any of the three levels of orchestras that you conduct, how do you make some of the decisions about what to play for which level?
Well, I've had a fair amount of experience working with youth and amateurs, and this has really helped me because you quickly learn what to avoid, and you also kind of get to know your own ensemble. You get to know them through the auditions or experience or whatever might be your background. But the things that helped me were working with the Greater Twin Cities Youth Symphonies in Minneapolis and working with the Northeast Orchestra of Fridley, which was a really interesting group of adult amateurs. It was they met on Friday mornings, and I think they still meet on Friday mornings. And the bassoonist was a retired doctor, the first bassoonist. He's since passed away. But and the string section was a mixture of lawyers and homemakers and doctors and so on. So I got a chance to try out a lot of different things with that group because I worked with them for a few years. Also, the Heartland Symphony up in Brainerd and Little Falls was kind of a mixture of amateurs and professionals and music teachers. So working in that circle, you learn what repertoire works and what doesn't, kind of by trial and error. And still, sometimes I'll pick something that I think, oh, this will be really fun, and then it turns out it's just too challenging. It's just a little bit too much, and then I choose something else. Many youth orchestra directors and conductors go on to the American Symphony website, and they chat sometimes about literature, and there's different lists. There's graded lists that are available. For example, at Lux Music, they'll list all the grade 5 pieces for the Texas all-state orchestras, or they'll list all the grade 4s, all the grade 3s. So they grade different pieces of music, 5 being the most difficult, 4 being not so much. So if you kind of, you can use that sometimes as a gauge and sometimes select things. But I've sometimes selected things for my top-level orchestra that turned out to be just too simple, so then I collect that music again and then just move it down to the the next level orchestra down, and vice versa. I could go and move it up to the next level. And you also learn, like, that Bob Cerulli or Merle Isaac or Sandra Dachau or some of the Frederick Mueller, some of these arrangers are very talented. And when you find that you can look at an arranger's name and it might be an arrangement of something, of say something by Beethoven or something by Rimsky-Korsakov, and then you just trust that arranger, looking at it, that it's going to work for amateurs or youth. And so that's been helpful too.
So that's an arrangement as opposed to playing the original version that would be played by a professional orchestra.
Right. And we do a lot of that with the youth orchestras because we expose them to these great pieces. Sometimes I'll find a piece that's arranged that the Illinois Symphony is doing so they can get a flavor of it, they can do a taste of it, they can do one movement of it, and then I can say, now let's go and hear the Illinois Symphony do the real thing, do the real, Sacred Dances of Debussy, or do the real Beethoven Symphony No. 8, or whatever might happen to be on scheduled by Meister Diehl.
But I assume there are plenty of pieces, particularly with your top orchestra, where you do the original version.
Right. So right now we're doing the Polovetsian Dances by Alexander Borodin. We're working on that as being an original piece that's not arranged. We're also doing selections from the Firebird Suite that is arranged by Merle Isaac. So we do mixtures with the top level group. So it's they get kind of experiences on the real originals that take a little bit longer for us to learn, and then the arrangements as well.
And do you ever take student suggestions?
I do. Sometimes in the spring, I like to put in one kind of pops-like piece. And so sometimes they surprise me. That one year they said, well, we really want to do Phantom of the Opera, or we really want to do the music from Cats. Or it's usually related to some kind of musical or some kind of experience or something like that that they're having in schools. But we try and do one pops-like piece, and they kind of guide me along as to what they'd like to try. I was hoping that Avatar would have music that we might be able to redo, but now after seeing the movie on Sunday, I don't know if there's going to be anything coming out from that movie that orchestras will play. The special effects were really cool, but I don't think any of the music from Avatar is going to be out on available in the market.
Although there have been concerts done of video game music.
Yes, yes.
Which have been apparently rather popular.
Yeah, I think so. I knew one guy in New York who did a fair amount of composing for video games, and I always thought that was odd because I've never been a video game player. My nephews, every time I've tried to play that, they wallop me something fierce. So I've always been, the piano and drum set and marimba and all of those instruments were occupying my time when I was growing up more so than video games were.
You'd think that those instruments would develop your hand-eye coordination pretty well, though.
I think they do. I think I do have pretty good hand-eye coordination. I enjoy racquetball and some of those things that, you know, as far as pressing these buttons at different, I don't know, I guess it just never felt comfortable for me. I'd rather play the piano than Nintendo.
Well, leave it to those who feel the opposite. And that's just as well. Well, Richard, thanks very much for joining us on the program today.
I do want to briefly say to your listeners that the Illinois Symphony Orchestra on February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day here at Sangamon Auditorium, we are going to have Rachel Barton Pine coming to play the Korngold Violin Concerto. And I really would love for your listeners to come to that concert on Saturday, February 13th at 8 p.m. And you're going to hear Fauré's Pelléas et Mélodies, the Korngold Violin Concerto, and a mystery composer as a Valentine's treat. So if you are free the day before Valentine's, come out and hear the Illinois Symphony at Sangamon Auditorium.
Well, and I think Karen Deal will be here, I forget which day next week, to cajole the listeners again.
Great.
To talk about that program.
Great.
Richard Haglund is assistant conductor for the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, also librarian there, and music director and conductor of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony Program. In Springfield, they're giving their concerto competition finals concert this Saturday at 1:30 at the Hoagland Center for the Arts on 6th Street in Springfield. Richard Haglund, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And some of the other events that you can see in our area in the next few days. The MRS Trio, a jazz jam group, is playing at the Iron Post in Urbana. That's tonight at 7 o'clock. On Wednesday, it's the weekly session of Irish traditional music at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign. That is at 7 o'clock. Kilbourne Alley Blues Band is at D.R. Diggers in Champaign. That's at 9 o'clock Wednesday evening. Donnie Heitler plays solo jazz piano at Great Impasta in Urbana Wednesday night at 6. And composer Philip Bloom of the University of Illinois faculty is giving a concert of his chamber music Wednesday night at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. On tomorrow's edition of Live and Local, I'll talk with Rebecca Nettle-Fiol about this week's February dance programs from the University of Illinois Department of Dance, and also Michael Luxner, conductor of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, about this weekend's Young Artists Concert. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from these business partners, AgriGold Hybrids of Muhammad, Anderson Foundation of Toledo, AppleEarn Incorporated of Danville, and A-Plus Farms Limited of Pine Village. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you. It's going to be partly sunny, the high 34 to this afternoon. Tonight, cloudy with a chance of some light snow and flurries, the low 25. Tomorrow, cloudy with some snow showers and flurries in the morning, the high 36. It's WYLL, FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. Currently 33 degrees at a minute past 1.